Hello and welcome back to the Andrew Haynes Show. On today's episode, Andrew sat down with Peter Billups, the assistant general manager of the Lynchburg Hillcats, the advanced A affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. Peter spent most of his career in and around minor league baseball. It was a pleasure to have on the show today. We hope you enjoy. Support for the Andrew Haynes Show is brought to you by Manscaped, who is best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code AGH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using the code AGH. Your balls will thank you.
Well, I think we're going to have an exciting show today. We've got Peter Billups, who has been in baseball his career and traveled basically across the whole country, you know, West Coast to the East Coast. He was able to secure a hot air balloon for Ripken Baseball for an event, so we'll hear about that. But, thanks for joining me, Peter. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew, for having me. Excited to be on. I'd skip over the middle part of the country.
There's nothing fun in there.
Some people like the Midwest. I haven't even checked it out. So
I lived in St. Louis and Canton, Ohio. Both were nice areas. But the West Coast I haven't lived, and I definitely have always been kind of like, man, I like exploring new areas. So I've always, you know, my wife hates it. You know, she says we're not allowed to move anymore. So I might have to wait a few more years.
There's always vacation, so.
Yeah. That was my best trip. You were on the West Coast. How far south in California?
Modesto's Central Valley area. Okay. I did the weekend trips to L.A. That was the farthest I went until the winter meetings previously in San Diego this past year, so. Finally got to check out San Diego after I left the West Coast. So
right. Yeah. It's like you're back now, you know, it was a car ride. Now you had to fly out, but walk us through, your career, you know, tell us where you started and where you're at now.
Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of people, if they're young professionals, that were like me when I was first getting going, had no idea what I wanted to do. Ended up at JMU. Had some great professors that kind of helped steer me in a couple of different directions. Ended up at a job fair for Ripken Baseball and walked away with an unpaid internship. And I realized that I was fortunate enough with, you know, some student loans, parents' help, and people in my corner to accept that. And I know that, you know, that's not always the case, but really enjoyed my time with Ripken Baseball. Got invited back the following summer to kind of head up the internship program. And so we had like 10 interns that did sales and marketing. And that's when I started with groups. You mentioned met Amy Venuto, and she oversaw, as the VP of Ripken Baseball at the time, oversaw the Cal Ripken World Series. And through one of the connections, I was like with a host family that second year. And overheard her say that she was looking for a hot air balloon because Cal Ripken Jr. asked for it specifically for his Cal Ripken World Series. And I was fortunate enough to know someone that I was living with that owned a hot air balloon. So that was...
I mean, how many people own hot air balloons? I mean, what's the likelihood of that, first of all?
No idea. So this guy, there's like a camp, a Christian-based camp that he helped organize and run. And that's the thing, those first 2 years, not getting paid, you just pay attention to little things. And one of the little things that always stood out is you never know who you're talking to and what they do or who they might know. And so I met the Alberts once my first summer through another intern. And when I said I was coming back, they were kind enough to open their house for me. So, you know, once again, people on your corner where, you know, they opened their home, didn't have me pay any rent. Very fortunate for that. Yeah, just like one of the players through minor league baseball, you know, get a host family here. Yeah, that's what it pretty much was. And so when I got to talking to him, you know, he did all these outdoor adventurous things. And it was the week before Amy was mentioning the hot air balloon that we're at dinner, and he mentioned how the camp has one that he bought and that he likes to go up in it every once in a while. And he doesn't do it as often as he'd like. And so when I heard, I ran home, made dinner for Fran and Pete, and practically begged them to, you know, help me with another way to impress the bosses there. But
What'd you cook?
Actually, you know, so it was Maryland. I did crab pizza.
Crab pizza. Okay.
Yeah. So did like a Old Bay white sauce, then light cheese and a bunch of crab meat. I was in college. I thought everything belonged on pizza. So
it doesn't? What do you mean?
I actually made crab pizza during COVID because I was thinking about the story. So it's kind of funny that came up again. But yeah, I mean, through that, I thought that I might want to do a different sport because I love baseball. It's my passion. I didn't want my job and lose passion because of a job. But instead, I found that it helped me. And I found that out through my professors and the reports that I had to do on my internships and the experience at Ripken Baseball, and was fortunate enough to graduate actually a semester early, which put me in position to go to the baseball winter meetings, which then landed me in Modesto, California. And just to let everyone know, if they aren't familiar with Modesto, California, it's not the East Bay, which is how it was kind of sold to me. the AGM was, you're right outside San Francisco. It's
what, about 2 hours? I was going to say. So what was that? What was that like, though? Just like, I mean, you're right out of college. What are you like, you know, in your early 20s? Like moving across the country, you don't have any family or friends there, I take it.
Yeah, I always wanted to kind of get out there. JMU was only in-state school. Born and raised out, well, born in DC area, raised outside of Richmond, and then went to JMU. So I was in Virginia for the first 22 years of my life and just wanted something different. You see in the movies, California looks great, but there's parts of California that are like anywhere else. This Modesto is a very blue collar town. The very genuine people, the relationships that I built there are amazing. I still have a couple season seat holders that reach out to me. My primary objective there was group sales. I found that I did a great job retaining clients and then also getting them to upsell and getting them to add on. And like I said, kind of building and then solidifying those relationships. And it was because it was a genuine blue collar town. If you didn't BS them, they didn't BS you back. Actually the GM at the time, president and GM, was a JMU guy. So that was a good cool connection. Yeah. Mike Garassi, he still consults for HWS Ownership Group. Still stay in touch with them. And, you know, that's the thing, the power of connection in sport industry. This world's smaller than people realize. So,
it definitely is. And like when you were there, were you just focused on ticket sales or did you get into, you know, premium sales, partnership sales?
I was able to sell the whole book, but you know, at the end of the day, you're told what your objective is. And so mine was groups, whether that was hospitality or just tickets. I kind of joke with people because we were a small staff, because it's this small community. After the first year, I was the director of group sales and I directed myself.
Yep.
I still had some objectives and stuff and had fun with it. I had some help during the summer with, taking some interns in, but yeah, you know, you've, you find out pretty quick what is needed of you when people, you know, have those open conversations. And like I said, I love that. I loved group sales. I think that that's actually one of the biggest parts of minor league baseball business. Very worried about it going into 2021 with coming out of COVID. But before that, I think industry average was about an 82% show rate for groups. And so when you compare that to a small market 70 game season seat, where that might be a 65% show rate for that, I think in Modesto, we were at 70. That extra 10%, when you get people coming through the gate and they're buying food and drink, it makes a huge impact on your business and being able to then give back to the community, because that's what minor leagues are all about.
Oh, yeah. So where'd you go? So you were the director of yourself in Modesto. And then what was your next gig?
My next gig, I got a call from Alan Benavides. He's still the GM of the Eugene Emeralds. You're talking about checking out the West Coast. Highly recommend Oregon. I feel like people just skip over it. They go Seattle. It's not even Washington. It's Seattle and then California. Right. You know, Portland's in between, and so is the whole state of Oregon. And so I accepted that job in October of 2014. Spent 4 years there. I was the director of ticket sales originally and then promoted to director of sales. We were a short season baseball team, so only 38 home games, which on the front office side is the best kept secret in baseball. That might be changing with the new MLB, MILB, you know, potentially getting rid of short season. But, you know, we just killed the summer, man. We had so much fun. It ended up being right place, right time. We had a core of people that first year that then we continued to grow. I think that we had 7 to 8 full-time people. I think we brought one in right as the season started that first year. And by the time I left, we were at 12 or 13 full-time staff members. And so when you're able to see that business grow and all the numbers grow and hit your goals year in, year out, it's, you know, it's fun. But it's also who you surround yourself with, and we just had the right people.
Just that's key. Yeah. Sure. You got to have the right chemistry too. And everyone kind of has to be like bought into, you know, the vision, the end goal, you know, and that's part of the leadership kind of setting that and making sure that you align the right people. So.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where I learned right away. If you can get a pulse for the community that you're working with and you can be present and active, and especially give back where you can, they're baseball and sports, it's a leisure activity. You know, this is everyone's happy place, or it should be. And so they don't have to support you, but if you're supporting your community, they're going to. That's happened Modesto, Ripken Baseball in Aberdeen, here in Lynchburg and Eugene. So it's been fun, but that's, talk about different markets. There's one constant, and it's surround yourself with, or two constants, surround yourself with good people and figure out what your community, what the pulse is inside your community.
What kind of drove you to leave Eugene and come back to Virginia?
To be honest, it was the fact that I felt like I couldn't go much farther in my personal development and career. We're a smaller staff here in Lynchburg, but with that said, ample of opportunities as far as leadership, but then also as far as personal growth. And Chris Jones gives us all the autonomy in the world to go and do whatever we want. You know, I guess there's a few parameters.
Within some constraints, probably.
But yeah, like, you know, it was a chance to come back to the East Coast. It was a chance to stay within the same ownership group that Eugene was in. Elmore Sports Group, fantastic owners. And, you know, when I first met Dave Elmore, he knew more about me than I knew about him. And that wasn't because I didn't do my research. He has a Wikipedia page. I do not, but he
not
made
yet.
Calls.
Not yet.
Yeah. He made calls, and the way he runs the business is it's a family, and you know, it makes a huge difference. And so, yeah, smaller staff, a unique opportunity here because we're trying to rebuild. Baseball's been in Lynchburg for a while. The stadium's been around since 1940, where, you know, I was leaving PK Park that just had their 10th, well, this year would have been their 10th season in PK Park in Eugene. And so, yeah, different challenges, but just a whole different opportunity that I wanted, you know, to challenge myself with.
What's been the craziest promotion that you've been a part of in baseball? I mean, baseball is kind of known for the wacky and crazy promotions.
Yeah. We did a Portlandia night in Eugene, that got picked up by MLB Network and others. And the reason being was we did flannel jerseys. They weren't actually flannel, but they had the plaid print. But then the baseball pants were jeans. I kid you not.
Okay, so like lumberjacks almost.
Oh, yeah. And the best, I think the best part of that is the player that volunteered to model the jersey did not smile. Like, it looked like it pained him to have this hideous jersey on. 2 years later, minor league baseball comes out and says that you can't wear specialized jersey bottoms. And we did it that year. I forget the team that did it the next year as special.
So just specialty jerseys
pants.
Now.
So you can only do the tops, and there's like more restrictions. You can do pants, but it has to be historically accurate. So like in Eugene, after that, we did a throwback night, and back in the day, they wore all green. So like they were all green pants and tops, and yeah, those were the Mike Schmidt days in Eugene, Oregon, actually 70s. So
he played there.
He did. He's the only professional baseball player, I believe, or only Hall of Famer to play there. Sorry. Hall of
Famer. I grew up in Pennsylvania. So, you know, obviously, you know, him playing there was good during my childhood.
Yeah, I actually just gave away my Mike Schmidt bobblehead that I had here to someone that was a huge Schmidt Phillies fan.
Nice. So. Number 20.
Yeah, and he was number 5 for the Emeralds. So.
Oh, was it? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. What's your bobblehead collection look like?
It's nothing crazy. I've moved so much and across country that it didn't make sense to keep all of them, but I just tried to keep the ones that like I was a part of, you know, so I have a JMU one and then a bunch of Eugene ones, a couple, like I have a Nolan Arenado from the Modesto Nuts days. And then I have a couple, Hillcats ones, but those we haven't given out cause they were supposed to be this year.
Right.
COVID.
So. Yeah. Well, I never really have put bobbleheads out. And so I just moved into my house in Florida about a month ago. And so I was going through some boxes. I was like, I got about a half dozen bobbleheads. So now I have them out in the office for once. So I can look at them. I got, these are mainly from the Peanuts because obviously I was up with the Fred Nats. So they had some, you know, laying around and they were like, here, does anybody want any? I was like, all right, I'll take them. And so now I have, you know, I've got Hillary Clinton bobblehead. I guess they did a Hillary Clinton night. It's pretty cool. But some of those people are just, I know I was getting emails when I was with the Fred Nats on, oh, I can't make the game, you know. Can I buy one of those from you? I'll give you $100 or like, I'm like, you know,
it's crazy. So like in Eugene, we had this one guy that would buy like 4 tickets for a bobblehead night. And so, you know, by the time I left, I passed off most of the ticket ops, but I would still manage the gates when we opened. And so I'm down there at the gates And this guy's like trying to have all four tickets scanned and carry out. And like, we have a line all the way to the street. And Eugene was unique because the parking lot was like out behind the stadium, but the ticket office was actually at Autzen Stadium. They didn't have a ticket office at PK Park. And so it went all the way to like, you couldn't tell who was in the ticket line or who was in the line to get in, which wasn't crazy far, but it was pretty far. So we had about that 1,000 people. And I mean, you have high school or college kids or, you know, a mix of people working the gates. And this guy just did not like the answer that my ticket taker gave him. And the fact that it's like, we'll scan your ticket. You can go back in and wait in the line again and get another one. And like, I'm just imagining like, it's a bobblehead. It's cool because people will come in for meetings in my office and like pick it up as a conversation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm amazed how many people like are trying to get extras, like you said, offering $100 just to save one. It's pretty crazy.
I bet you, I mean, I would assume that people probably put these like up on eBay the next day.
Yeah, we had, I can't remember which one, but we found one on eBay. I want to say we did an Ashton Eaton bobblehead, United States track athlete from Eugene area. And so Eugene was hosting the track trials in 2016, I want to say. And we did that bobblehead. And I checked the next day, and I want to say that they were selling for like $200. And I'm sitting here going like, you know, I get one as a staff member. I'm like, I don't want to lose my job over putting all this bobblehead online.
Right, but $200. So. Wow.
I still have that bobblehead. So, you know, Alan, if you watch this, I didn't.
It was not you on eBay. You know, yeah. P. Billups 26 was not you. No. So. What do you do? Like, what's your day to day now with the Hillcats? And I wouldn't say now, like just pre COVID. What areas of focus are you as? I see there's two assistant GMs with the club. So is it just kind of split up or?
Yeah, Chris decided that the direction that he wanted to take this team, and I think it's working out. We'll see. This year was supposed to be a really big year for us. We were supposed to host the All-Star game. You know, we had the same staff coming back where the year before Matt Klein, the other AGM, and Chris were the only two returning staff members.
Oh, wow.
Once we got past opening day. So yeah, a lot of changes, but I think that we were heading in the right direction. Then COVID hit, but I primarily oversee the ticketing where he does more of the partnership. And so it's a nice balance. Both of us sell everything. But once again, if you can focus on one thing, and also it makes it nice. Like, this year I oversaw our interns and front office where he oversaw all the game day staff. So it makes it easy to have, you know, more structured meetings when you're a smaller staff. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, we were mentioning it before we came on. If you can point people in the right direction and just, you know, have a little bit of structure, you don't have to have everything, you know, it just operationally flows a little better. I mean, I think the cool thing here is most of our decisions are made as a whole. You know, with COVID we're down to five guys. And it's been tough. My day to day now is handling high school baseball tournaments. We do travel ball tournaments. We have a huge one this weekend, Labor Day weekend. We're actually putting on. So this is the first time that we've hosted these travel ball events, and it's kept us afloat. It's kept five guys employed. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about is making it from point A to point B. And yeah, we're having fun with it though. Don't get me wrong. It's it's different, but you know, minor league baseball, we adapt and learn, man.
In a world where people are more aware and plugged in than ever, it's not enough to just have a great product. Consumers are looking for brands they can relate to. That's where Egghead Creative comes in. Everything they do is powered by deepening the connection with your brand. And every time you do business with them, they'll build a bespoke team of highly specialized creatives designed specifically around what you need. For more information, visit eggheadcreativestudio.com. That's E-G-G-H-E-A-D creativestudio.com. Or follow them on Instagram at Egghead Creative Studio. Now back to the show.
This is the first time that we've hosted these travel ball events, and it's kept us afloat. It's kept five guys employed, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is, you know, is making it from point A to point B. And yeah, we're having fun with it, though. Don't get me wrong. It's different, but you know, minor league baseball, we adapt and learn, man.
You have to, or you die. I mean, you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, the teams that are continuing to do things like, you know, you guys are getting creative with, you know, the travel ball. I see other teams doing movie nights. And I mean, those teams are going to be positioned so much better than teams just sitting back doing nothing. And, you know, I still believe that you can sell right now. I still believe people will buy right now. I think it's a unique approach. It's not your traditional process, but I think teams still should be trying to sell. And you know, for us, when I was selling, is identifying people who can be closed and who can't be right now. And you're building that pipeline. So 85%, you know, percent or 80%, you know, goes into this pile. That's a follow-up next month or in 3 months, a check-in, things like that. But I mean, there's businesses out there thriving right now due to COVID, you know, as well. Certain industries are doing extremely well. And so I really hate seeing teams sit back and do nothing. You know, which is, it's good to see you guys getting creative up there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, where we've kind of taken a big step back is social media. And for us, it, you know, we were never that team to post five times a day. But at the same time, we kind of took a step back just because, you know, there's other community stories going on. You know, we invite people out to the ballpark for our weekends, but outside that, you know, and celebrating the guys that have made it to the majors this year, you know, putting together a post for that. We, you know, luckily, like I said, with us being small staffed, we have a couple season seat holders that are texting myself and Chris and going, "Hey, just an update. This guy made his big league debut, or got traded in that Mike Clevenger deal, stuff like that." So, content wise, we're taking a step back, but other than that, yeah. Even if it's not directly like going for the close, being able to get in front of people, even on Zoom. I think what it was, one of your calls a couple weeks ago, where you're talking about how you challenged yourself to talk to two new people a week. You know, doing stuff to develop as a professional. For me, it's been reorganizing. It's one of my weaknesses. It always has been, which is funny since my background's ticketing and everyone thinks of the pristine ticket office.
I haven't seen many pristine ticket office. I see tickets everywhere. No, some of them are.
Hey, come to Lynchburg and you get that now. just trying to be even more meticulous about things, because for example, we ordered kids cups and we couldn't cancel that order. So, you know, rolling those over to 2021 and keeping track of what I do need to order versus not. And being, because like you said, some businesses, you know, you can't go for that close right now. Some businesses you can. And so what I feel like it's going to do is, you know, I'll be able to close some accounts on a normal time frame, and others, I know that it's going to be down to the wire. So if I can get ahead in those other areas, I can then address that sales, you know, that new sales cycle in March, if it even better not come down to March, but you know, you get my drift.
Yeah. So with your background, you know, I'd say primarily being on the ticket side, is that kind of right? Like, do you have anyone that does training for you and your staff there? Like, as far as like, I know you mentioned Amy, does she come in and do training with you guys, or do you have a company that you guys recommend or use to help develop your sales talent?
Yeah, I mean, being a student of Amy's, the fact that she helped with the training when I was in Ripken, we brought her in when I was in Eugene, and multiple times, actually, Alan and I brought Amy in. I have not brought in an outside sales consultant here on site. I did try Bill Gertine's platform, believe it's
online one.
And we were seeing an increase. It's tough to say, because I put newer salespeople in there, and also one of our veterans, and it's nice to have a refresher. The tough thing is, my background's ticketing, but you know, anytime you're smaller staff and small market, you know, you do a little bit of everything. So, you know.
How many times have you been in the mascot?
This one, I believe once. Okay. And then, but yeah, so that's Southpaw. Sluggo, much more than once, my 4 years. And then in Modesto, I was low man on the totem pole there in the off season, because you aren't going to bring in an hourly employee when you have full-time people doing nothing.
Yeah.
So I got to be Alan Wally. Never got to be Shelly the pistachio there. That was new that last year I was there. So
how has, you know, the sales process and just like the sale in general been different from, you know, the West Coast cities that you've been in to, you know, Lynchburg? Are they all similar sized, like, you know, cities? Like, is anything work way better in Lynchburg than it did in Eugene, or vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Modesto and Lynchburg are way better similarity. Blue collar, a little bit more conservative. But really, like I said, I think that regardless of where you're in, if you can find organizations to partner with, as far as nonprofits, if you can find things that make a difference in your community, you're going to do well. You know, our most liked post during COVID was when we went to Lynchburg Daily Bread and volunteered our time to serve homeless and people that needed food. So, you know, we were all wearing masks. It was different. That was our first time. We were all doing Zoom calls. That was our first time out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like, and I learned that in Modesto some, but Alan and Eugene has, it's in the top 5 or 10 and most nonprofits per capita.
Wow.
So people connect with stuff there. And you see that connection, and here we're seeing that as well, just on social. So minor league baseball is community based, and so you got to find your community. As far as the sales process go, I think that the gatekeeper is much harder in Lynchburg. You know, getting to the decision maker. Really? Oh yeah, and Eugene, man. Honestly, you're probably overdressed to be a president of a company in Eugene.
Really? I think it's my California shirt. So,
if you switch that to some trees, you know, you're good. A forest scene. But yeah, Alan, when I first got there, he told me how he went to one of the bigger clients in a suit, and he was overdressed. You know, so, and Eugene, we didn't go ties at all. And you could, if you really wanted to, but it wasn't required. It was, we still asked for a button down or a polo or a team polo. No other branding, but yeah, it, you know, pants and a button down, and no one ever
definitely
said anything.
More laid back. Yeah.
Where in Modesto, we wore ties, everything. You're going in when you met with a decision maker, like they were dressed to the T. You know, you matched that. Didn't have to suit it up, but yeah, and Lynchburg's a little bit of a mix. I think that it's because even though it's conservative, and even though Liberty's different than Eugene, University of Oregon, it's still a college town. And so they're used to people coming in and just being rocking a polo or no tie. And so I've had to pay attention on which businesses I'm calling and how to dress that part.
But, appropriate for the meeting.
But yeah, like networking events, you know, I still go laid back. And the reason I chose that here, and when I talked to our interns about going, is because we're selling fun. We're selling an experience. And, you know, when you look at someone and you're like, I wish I could wear a polo to one of these instead of the shirt and tie, right, or, you know, suit.
I'm not a fan of ties. I hate ties. I mean, I have, once I got into custom suits, I really don't mind suits. I don't like ties though.
So for the longest time, I was afraid to ask in Modesto if I could, like, just have a tie with me, because there's nothing worse as a salesperson when you have to bust out a couple hundred calls a day and wearing the tie during it. No one can see you. They're just like, oh, you look the part. Like it's too tight on the neck. Like I'm not even a top button guy. Right. You know?
Yeah. So what are your sports? What sports you like to watch? I mean, you're in baseball, but what do you enjoy outside of work?
Yeah. I mean, I try to make it to the golf course at least once a month. You know, that's kind of my outlet. Other than that, Eugene really turned me on to the craft beer scene. Some of the best craft breweries out there, and a lot of them, had to be careful, but, it was fun.
Are you the type that goes to, like, I've never really got into, like, I'm not a craft beer drinker, but I've had friends where they'll go, like, there's places that they'll have like a couple hundred like different flavors, and like you get like a jacket or you get something like for trying and tracking all of the different craft beers. Have you ever done anything like that?
No.
Okay. Have you seen anything like that though?
Yeah. So in college, one of the bars that would do steal a pint night, they kept trying to get me to sign up, and I'm like 100 beers, that's going to take forever. And also as a college student, I couldn't afford 100.
Yeah, true.
So, and then when I moved away, like I didn't think about it. I went back and they're like, oh, do you have a thing? And my buddy from college signed up and got through like 25 beers. And so when he goes back to alumni events, he stops by there to have just one. And so it's going to take him a while, but they give you a patch or something like that. That says 100 beer club.
How is it in Lynchburg? Is there a craft beer scene there? Or?
So one of the first partnerships that I sold in Lynchburg was with Three Roads Brewing Company.
How convenient that was, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the great guys. They were out of Farmville and doing great, but needed more production space. And so they moved and they stayed Farmville, but second location here in Lynchburg. And they were supposed to open, I think, January. It got pushed back a little bit. But right as they opened, Star Hill Brewing opened a location here. So when I moved here, we had zero breweries in downtown. We're only an hour away from probably the hotbed in Virginia of some of the originals, craft beer and cider. But
where is that at? Like an hour from where?
It's on 151. So it's most people call it the 151 trail. And
is it like a city or what is it? What's the area called?
Yeah, it's Nelson County. It's between like Lynchburg and Charlottesville, pretty much.
Sounds like in the Lynchburg middle of nowhere.
It is. So they're all, it's almost like a vineyard type experience when you go out there to those, because you're going there for the breweries. But that's the nice thing is up and down the 151 there's one almost every 5 miles probably.
Wow.
And so
you guys have a hard cider at your ballpark?
We do. We partner with Bold Rock. Okay. So Bold Rock is on the 151.
I got a good one in Virginia. That's why I was like, I actually like it. And they did a sponsorship with the Fred Nats, and they're going to be in the new ballpark. But it's good. It's the first time I've tried it.
Yeah. We had a cider company in Eugene for 1 year. They were really different. They did like a dry cider instead of a sweeter one. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, Bold Rock, the thing that's really cool about what they did last year is came out with the seltzers. And so we were able to do a local seltzer instead of like a White Claw or Truly.
Yeah.
And man, we're selling it. All these high school parents there, you know, I guess some of those games get a little boring. They're helping us out on the concession side.
It's like when you used to go to like, you know, like Chuck E. Cheese, you know, they sell beer and wine, and I think they're out of business now, but they were, those parents are getting sloshed up. And
hey, when it's a birthday party and, you know, you just need to get through it. Apparently as a parent that I did not realize how important coffee would be, and then beer and wine, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand parenting.
I would think your per caps would probably go up for that, potentially, just because of, you know, travel, baseball too. I don't know. I would think it's probably more middle and upper, you know, income,
type people. It definitely is.
So
yeah, it definitely is. The problem is also though, not a lot of places serve food or beverage, and even fewer serve alcohol for these travel baseball. So, you know, you're kind of, it's a unique market because they aren't expecting it. So when they come, you know, they have to think about it instead of just do it. We were opened as a restaurant and still are. So with that, like we were requiring these tournaments to email out our concession menu. So yeah, it certainly helped, but yeah, it's crazy. If the teams are staying overnight, yeah, those per caps are great because mom and dad can have one or two, but
or three or four.
I mean, they're with their kids, Andrew. We're gonna just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know. I mean, I got kids too, but I mean, my kids are older now. My daughter's 23, and I got 16, so they know that I have no sense, but. So you said you play golf like, you know, maybe once a month. Are you any good?
I mean, no, but I hold my own. So like low 90s, maybe upper 80s. But yeah, I think my best score ever was like an 82, 83. And that was just, I'm inconsistent. So that was the one day of my whole life.
It was like everything aligned.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I did win, you know, my dad does like a trip with a bunch of his friends, and they convinced me to go after my sophomore year, but I tore my shoulder. So my handicap score, they tracked it all week. It was so messed up. I finally started playing well at the end of the week and I won the tournament, and my dad's friends will not golf with me now, which is hilarious, you know, 'cause now they can all play from the gold tees.
Right.
Some of them eat, you know, and they can, every other time they whoop my butt, but they tracked my handicap. They gave me like 25 strokes because I was shooting like 120 all week. And then the last day when they did the tournament, that's the only golf tournament I've won. I've played in a bunch of charity stuff. First, you know, I'm not a big dude. I've won two long drives though. I'm pretty proud of that.
Nice. So, I love the golf. I absolutely love it. But I don't really like count like my score. What I do is I count how many balls I lose. And so that is kind of my goal. So if I can lose less than one ball per hole, I count that as a good day. And honestly, my wife and I, we're not now, but we just moved back, but we're usually like a member of a club. And so we would go out very frequently and we both suck, but we look like we're on tour. Like if you see us pull up to the first hole, you're like, damn, who are these two? And then when we start swinging, then you realize, okay, this is not good. But yeah, I just stopped counting and I have a lot more fun that way. When I count, I'm like, ah. Oh.
And that was that's the thing. Like if I keep counting, you know, then I need to do lessons or something, but you know, or play more often. Cause like I said, it's frustrating going like, I just ripped that drive, you know, 280 to 300. And then you just chunk the next shot. Cause that's me.
I know I'm a lefty. So, okay. I was out there golfing one day and, you know, a friend of mine, he's got like, you know, like a pro card or whatever. He's been in some tournaments and coaches golf. And he's like, you know what? Maybe you're not left-handed. You know, I'm that bad. I must be right-handed. So who knows? We'll see. But, you know, I love to get out there when I can. Last thing here. Tell me how the food scene is there. I saw on your bio that you're a foodie. You know, how has that been in Lynchburg and, you know, compared to the West Coast? I'm thinking Eugene probably was pretty solid. I am not good at golf at all. I look good out there. I'll say I look good out there, but I don't swing well. But I was out there with my friend. He's, you know, he's great. He's really good. And we would golf a lot. He was my business partner as well. And I remember we're out there one day, and I'm a lefty, so I've got some nice clubs. I thought buying the nice clubs would help. It has not helped. But anyway, I'm out there. I'm a lefty, swinging away, and he just, you know, after I hit the ball, he comes up to me and he goes, hey, have you ever thought about the fact that you might not be left-handed? So I'm that bad that he thinks I'm probably not even left-handed. I must be right-handed. He would probably beat me left-handed, and he's right-handed. So, but I like, hey, it's all about having fun. Don't count your score. Count the balls you lose. And have fun.
Well, and there's so much business that can be done on a golf course if you just pick it up for fun. The number of times that I've been invited out by clients just to play in a charity thing, it goes a long way in building those relationships we were talking about. You know, like us, when we do a foursome, we typically do two of our guys and try to mix it up. I mean, heck, there was the Chamber one out in Eugene, Springfield. Alan always signed me up, but he wouldn't sign anyone else on the team up because he didn't want me to play with them. like go meet three people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
do you guys have a home golf course for the team? Like you guys have a trade deal for you guys and the players?
We have a couple partners. This year we have three, actually the nice thing, golf courses didn't get shut down and they decided to, you know, let us play still.
So, and you should practice and, you know.
I know. So we have three. They charge us some, you know, a small fee to just cover some costs, but they don't, it's not the full rate. So
how about like, you know, like, so you've kind of, you know, made a few stops. Like, are you like,
where you're at now, I know it's kind of closer to home. Is it like, is that kind of like your place? I mean, do you still have like career ambitions to maybe get to the next level? What are you trying to do?
For me, like the minute that I started in minor league baseball, and not a lot of people are like this, you know, I loved it. It's about the community. I keep harping on and connecting with, it's about the community.
Yeah.
It's about the people. And then I'm just one of those guys, I can't do the same thing every day. And so especially
minor league baseball, you don't have to worry about that.
No. I mean, I'd rather not pull tarp, but
yeah,
which I didn't have to do in Modesto or Eugene. Like when I got to
get out of that,
it didn't rain in California.
Oh,
and then, so the Pacific Northwest, people think that it just rains all the time. It rains like from October or middle of October to like middle of June. And because we were short season, we started middle of June. So the beginning of the season, it was a turf field. So every once in a while, we'd have to cover the mound and the plate, but it wasn't pulling a tarp on. I don't think that we got rained out once. We had a power out in 4 years. I think in the 10 years, they had one rain out in Eugene since being at PK Park, the 10 seasons. But yeah, when I was in Modesto, they gave me the polos when I started, and I was like, oh, awesome. Well, do we have tarp clothes? Because it was the first thing they gave me at Rifkin Baseball. It's like, you're on tarp team A or you're on tarp team B, and here's your tarp clothes. And it was just a logo dry fit.
Right.
But I'm like, hey, do we have like a tarp shirt? And my boss was like, just wear something kind of plain. And no, he was like, the one time you'll pull tarp every year is just to practice. And sure enough, every time we pulled tarp, I think we only pulled it one time in my 2 years in Modesto, and it was literally to practice.
I kept hearing about this tarp pulling stuff, and I tried to see if I could get an exemption as an executive, but then I was like, well, then my staff's going to look at me and call me old and talk shit. So I wasn't going to let that happen.
That's the one thing that I learned pretty quickly. If you can't ask people to do something you won't do.
Yeah.
So,
very true. I wanted to get out of it, but I was willing to do it. But hey, I didn't have to. So
it's just like the mascot, you know, I have photo evidence that I've done it before.
Right.
I can't ask someone to do something I haven't done.
So does like the team president do it? Is that exempt from it? Like what level do you get exempt from it?
Like, so my one mascot thing was like here. Was for a quick photo video thing.
I'm talking tarp with the president.
Tarp. Tarp. No, he's here. He's always here.
Okay. I mean, small staffs. I'm figuring everybody's probably having to do it.
Yeah,
the box office.
What?
Yeah, get out of it.
Never me. So, I mean, we pulled tarp a lot last year in Lynchburg. We've pulled it a couple times this year. It's nice to have two teams of high school players when you pull it.
Right.
But yeah, it's just an interesting way, especially if it's like the end of the day and then to start your day and you have to be in at like 8 a.m. after like leaving, you know, cause you can't leave it on cause it's going to burn the natural surface. So
I think we should have a competition amongst all the teams in the league of who can pull the tarp the fastest and get it put in place.
Well, that, but I'm more curious about who can put it away the best, like, and looking professional, because
I've seen some of those roles
that we've had one bad role in the 2 years that I've been here, but man, watching the Nationals Orioles game, I think it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
The number of people that were sending me like that and going like, hey, we do it better. I mean, we had baseball that weekend or the weekend before that happened. That might have been a midweek day. But one of the teams, like one of the parents, tagged us in that video, like tweeted it and just said, the Hillcat staff and like their team and the other team pull it better than professionals.
Nice.
I'm like,
nice. See that? Making progress.
Well, and it's memory for the kids. They haven't pulled it before. These high, I need to just get local high school kids to pull it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can be our team A and team B.
Exactly. That's what I would have did. I would have tried to recruit a team of people to just do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, then Andrew, you can come up here and help us out next year. Cause
I want to come up and be an honorary tarp puller for a game. So,
and then just stand there and watch.
Exactly. I like to lead. I'll come up and do it. I'll come up and check out a game. So,
yeah.
Well, no, man, I want to thank you for joining me, man. It was good chatting. I wish we would have got a chance to chat sooner, man. It's, you know, I want to pick your brain some more and, you know, kind of keep in touch over the next few months.
Yeah, if everything worked out, you could have been here for the All-Star game in June, but, you know, COVID.
Damn it. COVID.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Andrew.
Hey, podcast fans, thanks for listening to today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, be sure to reach out to Andrew on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.